The Witness of Ancient Wisdom, Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. The Witness of Modern Wisdom, Forever is in Our Hands, by Maran Tirabassi. God makes us shepherds and gardeners, so none of God's relations, creatures, growing things, land, water, wind, sky, need be in want. God gives us lying down places of green pasture, rainforest, delta, desert, high mountain, deep canyon, and paths by arroyo, deep river, waterfall, ocean shore, and these restore our souls. Creator leads us to care not from duty, but from love. Though we pass chemically poisoned fields, overfished seas, and the terrible tears of the valley of extinction, when we join the weeping, we no longer fear so deeply. God sets up one global table in spite of the turned over ones of corporate influence, money, political power. God anoints us with community, teaches us overflowing wells. Surely we follow with committed people, people of goodness and mercy, from Chico Mendez to Greta Thunberg, and so many, so many more. Where we dwell now is God's house. Forever is in our hands. God is still speaking, and we are still listening. Thanks be to God.
Thank you, Tony. Will you pray with me? Merciful God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight. O God, our help and our Redeemer. Amen. I had a realization the other day, and it was that I have become a man of a certain age. And I know this because my hobbies have become reading books about World War II and watching Ken Burns documentaries on PBS and tuning in to the latest NASA live stream. When Artemis II launched on April 1st, I wanted our kids to feel that same excitement that I felt. And so I gathered them on the couch and we sat down for this truly historic event, the first woman, first African-American, the first Canadian to leave our planetary orbit and circumnavigate the moon. From our couch, the kids and I watched the launch and the landing and the press conference and the Q&As. And after the predictable questions about space toilets, pilot Victor Glover took the microphone and shared some truly powerful reflections. At the farthest point from Earth any human has ever traveled, 252,000 miles out, the moon filling the window, Glover looked back at our Earth growing smaller and smaller in their window and offered the first, I won't say it's the last, but the first Easter sermon preached from space. And he talked about seeing the Earth in its entirety against the backdrop of space. He described looking into what he called all of this emptiness and finding against all that dark this oasis, this beautiful place where we get to exist together. And he quoted the great commandment, love God, love your neighbor. And he said simply, we got to get through this together. The word this is doing an awful lot of work in that sentence. This life, this political moment, this climate crisis. We got to get through this together, he said. And I heard that as a cosmic call to wonder, as well as an invitation to a new kind of solidarity. A reminder that despite our various politics and borders and beliefs, we are all, every one of us, passengers on this same cosmic vessel. This is our cosmic common home. And this should make us thoughtful and humble. It should cause us to think of how we can be good stewards. Teach us to care for this earth, protect it. Teach us that it is a place where all life is here to thrive, and we have a role to play. This morning we read Psalm 23, a familiar favorite portion of scripture, and I had to put it in New King James, in King James, because that speaks to me the most of its poetry. But you've heard these words this morning, words of comfort and assurance, green pastures, still waters, paths of righteousness. And Marin Tirabassi, a poet and theologian, names us as the ones called to make all of that possible for others and all life, says that God makes us shepherds and gardeners, so none of God's relations need be in want. But this is not the only story of shepherds in our lectionary today. In the interest of time, I did not read the whole gospel reading from John 10, verse 1 through 18, but it tells two stories, and a story about a shepherd as well. A story about a shepherd, but also a story about a thief. First, it says a shepherd calls his or her sheep by name. They know their shepherd's voice. They follow a good shepherd. And the good shepherd literally lays down their life for their sheep. In the second story, a stranger climbs over the wall in the dark, not to tend the flock, but to take from it. And Jesus calls that figure a thief, the one who comes only to steal, to kill, and destroy. It's this sharp contrast. Now, from a planetary perspective, we might ask, in all honesty, when it comes to this Earth, our common home, which role has humanity played? We can see our fingerprints from space, the wildfires, the forest clearing, the warming. At times, we have looked more like the one who climbs over the wall than the one who tends the gate. But Psalm 23 doesn't end in accusation or guilt. It ends in abundance, in mercy, in dwelling. God, our shepherd, does not abandon the sheep or the pastures. And God does not abandon us, Earth's shepherds, even when we've forgotten what we're called to be. One thing I'm learning, it's not enough to talk about caring for the Earth as if from this great distance of space. The pale blue dot is beautiful, but you can't see a child's feet from that distance. 20 years ago about, I led a service trip to Harlan, Kentucky, the heart of coal country. We were there to repair a rotten bathroom floor for a family living in a dilapidated trailer. It was simple work, but it was necessary work, and every day we worked on it, we saw as many as 20 coal trucks roll by on the road outside, back and forth from the mine to the depot and back. And as they rolled along, coal dust settled on everything, the windows, the porch, the ground. And that family had three small children. Three children who ran about barefoot the way kids do. And I noticed that their toes were black, not dirty, but black from the coal dust that was simply the air that they breathed, the ground that they played on, the world that they'd been born into. They weren't making any decisions about coal. They had no vote in the matter. They were just children running around in the only yard that they had. But I think about those kids whenever we talk about energy and the energy transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy. When someone reflects on the upfront costs, I think about who has been paying the cost of our energy economy for generations, long before climate change was a dinner table conversation. The families in the hollers of Appalachia, the communities along Cancer Alley in Louisiana, the neighborhoods downwind of refineries. And I think about the children on the other side of the world, kids working in what are sometimes called artisanal mines in the Democratic Republic of Congo, digging by hand for cobalt and other rare earth minerals. Cobalt that ends up in the batteries in our electric vehicles and our laptops and our phones. The very technologies that we're counting on for a green future. Those children are part of our future too. And they just aren't getting any of the benefits. People sometimes talk about not just having the need for a transition in energy, but a just transition. And this is what they're talking about, not just cleaning up the air in the abstract, but asking whose air, whose children, whose feet are black, and whose hands are clean. Tiribasi writes that God leads us to care not from duty, but from love. And I think that's an important difference. Duty says we should reduce our carbon footprint. But love says, I see that child. I see those feet, and I cannot unsee them. See, this concern about the climate is also hitting closer to home for us here in the Pacific Northwest. We had a record warm winter. You felt it. My family loves to go skiing, both downhill and cross country, and the snowpack on Mount Hood was far below what it should be. In January, we visited Crater Lake, and they said they were 8 feet behind their regular snowpack. Now, I know some people think first about ski season, and yes, that matters for our economy, for the communities up on the mountain, but there's a deeper concern, of course, downstream. Quite literally, farmers are watching their water supply with anxiety. Neighbors are already calculating wildfire risk for the summer. As we know, the snowpack on Hood isn't just a recreational amenity, it's a reservoir. It's a sort of bank of water that we will rely on later in the year. It's a promise that water will come when the dry season arrives, and this year that promise is a lot thinner than it should be. In a warming environment, we are doing what we can, and one of the things that we're doing is planting trees. Last year, we partnered with Friends of Trees to plant trees, not just alongside of our church on 5th Street, but out in our community, because we know that the tree canopy is one way that we can cool the earth, because trees hold water, they give shade to the land and to other life. And then, I'll tell you, I read a study that caught me back, and it was a study that said that the area surrounding data centers runs 16 degrees warmer than normal. 16 degrees. We are, in some places, making the earth hotter right at the moment when the earth most needs to cool down. I want to say I'm not against all data centers. I'm not against technology. I know that the same networks that let our youth testify before the legislature for a make polluters pay bill, the same tools that connect this congregation with our wider church, connect with other people who care about creation. I know that that's living on a server somewhere. The cloud is really just a story we tell ourselves to feel better. Technology is not necessarily our enemy. But I think about the words of Wendell Berry, a poet, farmer, theologian, who has spent a lifetime asking questions like, does this tool serve life or does it diminish it? The question isn't whether we have data centers. We will have data centers. The question is whether we insist that they be built and powered in a way that the earth can bear, that the companies building them will also be good neighbors to the soil, the water, the downstream farmers already watching the sky. Earlier this year, a farmer in Pennsylvania named Mervyn Radabaugh was 86 years old, was offered more than $15 million to sell his 261 acres to a data center developer. And he did something really surprising. He turned it down. And he sold the conservation rights instead to a land conservation group. And he said, the reason was, I just didn't want to see those two farms destroyed. I respect God's green earth. Friends, I believe we're called to be more than just consumers. We're called to be shepherds, to care for this earth, which is our home, to ask what is needed for life, for thriving, for the well-being of all that is entrusted to our care, the resources and living things which we are called to steward. I'll admit, in our current moment, it's sometimes hard to find hope. But I think Tirabassi named something important. Surely we follow committed people of goodness and mercy, from Chico Mendes to Greta Thunberg and so many more, so many, including people who are in this room. This last year, our middle school students went door to door and all the way to the Oregon legislature advocating for this bill to make polluters pay. And it didn't get a floor vote this session. It got further than last year. But they showed up and they learned a little bit of how democracy works. And you can be sure that they'll be back and they'll be sharing their journey with us. And then our younger children were making these amazing art creations, talking not about despair or doom, but hope, and imagining what that future could look like. We need their imagination. We need their hope. And hope is important because in the Christian tradition, we know it's not just wishful thinking. Hope is what you practice when the evidence isn't fully in yet. It's not naive optimism, but rather it's a spiritual practice that we commit ourselves to. It's a muscle that we learn to flex and use and strengthen over time and practice. On Thursday, in our pub theology conversation, we were gathered around these questions and talking about how we can make a transition in energy and what does that have to do with God. But we got talking about solar panels and battery storage and heat pumps, and there are some experts in this room, I have to tell you. And for them, the energy transition isn't abstract, it's happening in our neighborhoods, and we get to be a part of it. There are things we can do. And as a congregation, we're also asking questions. We're asking, what does a sustainable budget look like? And for me, that in part means, what does a sustainable footprint look like for us as a community with a building and a responsibility to our neighbors nearby and our neighbors around the globe? What does it mean for us to shepherd God's good green earth. I come back to those pictures from the Artemis II mission. Victor Glover aboard a spacecraft they named Integrity. There at the furthest point from Earth that any human has ever traveled. Looking back at the oasis we call our home and saying, we gotta get through this together. We gotta get through this together. Tiruvasi's last words this morning, where we dwell now is God's house, forever in our hands. I want to say that is not a guilt trip or a burden, that is an invitation. The green pastures, the still waters, God has provided them for us and for all life, all creation. But God also calls us to be shepherds and tenders of this creation. So whether you are an 86-year-old farmer turning down $15 million out of respect for God's green earth, or a teenager standing in a legislative hallway waiting to testify, or a child mixing paint trying to imagine a hopeful vision of our future, or a congregation sitting together asking honestly, what can we do? You are answering the call. Not from duty, but from love, from community. That is the difference between the shepherd and the thief. And that is the difference I believe we are invited to make. May it be so.